Welcome to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. I'm your host, Christina Frazier. Tonight's speaker, Jennifer Tidwell, Deputy Director for Kansas City Department of Housing and Community Development, will discuss what the city is doing to help people secure and keep affordable housing. This show is recorded on September 23rd at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church here in Kansas City, Missouri. Our show begins with the speaker's presentation, followed by a short break, and then concludes with the question and answer part of the program. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's join the conversation here at 90.1 FM, KKFI.
Good morning, I'm Michael Duffy. Welcome to the All Souls UU Forum, Kansas City's longest ongoing conversation. It's the forum's mission to afford a platform for the discussion of significant issues, especially those which involve ethical values in the contemporary world. This morning we have Jennifer Tidwell speaking to us on the subject of Kansas City housing policy. It sounds like a dry topic, but really it's a very personal topic to a lot of people in our community now. The cost of housing, particularly rental housing, is soaring in Kansas City, as it is, frankly, across the entire country. Jennifer is here to speak with us about what's happening in Kansas City and putting that in a national context. She currently serves as a senior official in the city's housing department. She's a section manager. She's joined the city recently, having come off an appointment as the regional manager for HUD in the four-state region, and she's had a number of other state appointments. She's very experienced in this area, and I'm really looking forward to her comments on city housing policy. So I ask you to welcome Jennifer Tidwell.
Good morning, everyone. This morning, I have the pleasure of speaking with you. I am really excited about the conversation. I have been in the housing and community development area for a long time, 25 years or plus, and so I really am excited about being here with you today. We hear stories all the time of individual families that are working two and three jobs in order to make ends meet, and just for shelter, food, and medical services. So we hear that a lot in our city, and that needs to be addressed. The rate of evictions in Kansas City make it even more difficult for these families. Eviction filings have remained relatively constant in Kansas City, suggesting that there are some landlords in the city for whom eviction is a business model. African American people living in poverty are disproportionately impacted by these evictions. And race is the most important factor. Even when you hold income constant, those African American families are evicted more often. Our American senior population, and also here in Kansas City, are projected to increase for about 20% by the year 2030. Affordable, accessible, and well-located housing is central to the quality of life of our seniors. As the single largest household budget, housing costs are rising exponentially here in Kansas City. But that is something that all of us value in terms of our financial security and accumulating wealth. So we have to give some attention to that. Accessibility is essential for seniors for mobility and safety. Proximity of housing to stores, services, transportation enables older Kansas Cityans to remain active and productive members of their community, meet their own basic needs, and maintain the good social connections that we like here in Kansas City. And for those that have chronic conditions and disabilities, the availability of housing and supports is essential to the quality of life and long-term care and life expectancy. Since 2000, Americans have had their combined housing and transportation costs grow faster than household incomes. And now, utilities are becoming a greater issue, with electric, gas, and water proving to be even an additional burden on our families. This trend affects everyone, and especially those most vulnerable. Kansas City ranks approximately 6th in utility and energy costs across the country. And so we are one of the cities that are less affordable in terms of rent because of the rent and mortgages because of that. 30% of our homeowners are cost burdened. 43% of seniors that live in their homes are cost burdened, and 50% of our renters are cost burdened. This is a big issue here in Kansas City. And so we have to find ways in which to really provide some additional assistance to folks in terms of utilities and cost burden. Home ownership is something that we all aspire to have. And in Kansas City, home ownership is across all races and religions is very important. While we were doing our housing policy public hearings, almost every sector of the city talked about how the city can begin to increase the homeownership rates. They're already around 40-50% in almost every area of our city, and folks in the room wanted to increase homeownership even more. They want their children to be able to buy homes around them. Kansas City used to have a big homeownership assistance program, and many of those residents within our hearings asked that we bring that back to start having that homeownership assistance program, and that's how they bought their home. And so there's a lot of discussion around homeownership. The city of Kansas City just recently did a market value analysis of our properties throughout the city. That market value analysis basically said that Kansas City has a rich, rich history of home ownership. So we have a lot of single family homes. But what has happened over the years are those single family homes have been picked up by out-of-town investors instead of homeowners because the home ownership rate has decreased. They have been picked up by these folks and they have started renting them. And instead of trying to take that rental and move it back into home ownership, they have become slumlords. And so we have a big problem in Kansas City as it relates to our single family homes. A lot of them are rental and not being turned over as home ownership. So that has been a big conversation with our housing policy group. And so we're hoping that we'll be able to find some solutions to do that. The other piece that is near and dear to me is homelessness in special populations. We continue to see our homeless population rise. Over the last 5 years, the city, as well as many of the homeless agencies, have made a really concerted effort to eliminate veterans' homelessness. Both the Veterans Administration, HUD, the Health and Human Services, all three of those agencies work collectively to try to bring together services as well as vouchers for veterans to live. Kansas City has, in many cases, created new housing for veterans around the VA hospital, a great veteran village over there. And, we're talking about, how do you do alternative housing, like tiny houses for veterans if they want to do that. But there's been a really concerted effort by both federal, state, and local agencies to begin to help solve the problem of veterans housing. As a result, our veteran housing has decreased quite a bit. The other thing that has been done in terms of veteran housing is that we are beginning to say housing first. Let's get folks housed and then wraparound services to them. And so we did a lot of that with the veteran population, but now we're beginning to try to figure out how to do that with children and families and other homeless populations that are out there, trying to house them first, and then once you get them housed, then try to figure out how to wrap around services, because we feel that housing is the platform for how they, what quality of life they will have. And so as you get folks in housing, then try to, you know, wrap the services around them. Kansas City has also embarked on what is called a continuum of care or coordinated entry for the homeless and special populations. So we are working quite diligently on that in order to begin to give folks to come and tell us what they want from the different agencies. So that is going forward today. A National Association of Realtors survey show that half of Americans prefer neighborhoods with a variety of housing types, including single family, multifamily. They want shops and restaurants and grocery stores and all the amenities, and they also want public transportation. So over the last probably 10 years, Kansas City has made a concerted effort to begin to do some transportation options. They have put in the Main Street bus system, rapid bus system. We've seen a lot of development around that transportation node. They just recently put in the Truce Max. And as you see, every time there is some transportation, and this is a lot of investment, $40 to $50 million of investment from the federal government and from Kansas City to put in a lot of this transportation options. And as you see that coming, there's a lot of housing that is beginning to come around those. The third transportation node will be Prospect, and so we're hoping that on the east side of the city that there will begin to be development there and a lot of fixing up of our infrastructure. Housing is the framework for building our communities, I believe, and removing barriers and increasing the flexibility is paramount to creating growth and community. And community involvement, I feel, is really essential to how our housing and community development evolves. We need your voices. We need your voices to say, I want home ownership. I want some coordination within all the agencies. So don't be afraid to put your voice to this issue. All of the community must be open to new ideas and growth, and while still preserving our community in the fabric that it is. And so that's why your voices are needed. These are complex challenges in the community. We, as I was talking about before, that, you know, incomes are not rising. So as a result, we need to have solutions that meet those incomes, whether it's being trying to find gap money through foundations or banks who have CRA credits. There's a lot of solutions out there that we need to think about. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the housing policy and how it came about and where we are in terms of the status of that housing policy. In November of 2017, the City Council did an ordinance to ask the city staff to begin to do a 5-year housing policy. As a part of that, the staff began to lay out how they would want to see a housing policy evolve. So there were several sections to the housing policy. The first was community input. So there were at least 7 public hearings around the city, as well as specific groups that we met with. We met with the homeless agencies, we met with developers, we met with realtors, we met with a number of different stakeholders in order to get their comments. All the residents' public hearings were open to the public. We saw each of those public hearings full of people and full of good suggestions. Apparently, one of the big issues was trash, which we didn't, I guess, anticipate that. But one of the big issues associated with those public hearings had to do about the appearance of the neighborhood. You know, there's a lot of dumping and just a lot of trash on the street, and they just wanted to tell the city that in order for us to have housing that's presentable, we need to look at the appearance of our neighborhood. So anyway, that was one that I didn't expect, but it came up at every public hearing. And I talked a little bit about home ownership as well. So I'm going to just read you a little bit about the policy goals that were set out. There was a lot of statistics as well that you will see in the housing policy. It is online now, so you're welcome to go and look at it. There's a draft online. But I wanted to go over some of the housing policy goals. Maintain and increase housing supply to meet the demands of diverse population. So we have seniors that need housing, we have families, we have moderate income, we have the workforce that people are working that want to be near their in places of employment. So there's a diverse population out there that needs housing. Broaden the capacity and innovation of funding sources. So Kansas City receives a number of federal funding sources each year. However, the amount of money that comes down to Kansas City has been decreasing. So we would like to find additional funding sources in order to help us solve the affordable housing problem. So we are beginning to reach out to banks and foundations and other types of funding sources. A lot of cities as big as ours have begun to actually put together funds from bonds, put together funds from a number of real estate type options, real estate recordings. So there has been cities around the country that have come up with funding sources for which they are creating this source of funds to put into affordable housing. Maximize coordination between the city, neighborhoods, businesses to improve the overall appearance and safety of the city and sustain neighborhood traditions and diverse cultures. So here again, the overall appearance and safety was talked about a lot in our public hearings. Abate dangerous buildings. Number four was abate dangerous buildings and deteriorated structures to remove blighting conditions while actively creating housing rehabilitation and new infill developments. So as you know, with the housing foreclosure crisis, Kansas City was not immune to that. There's a lot of vacant properties out there, and we're trying to figure out how to eliminate that blighting condition. Ensure environmental and sustainable housing while accounting for environmental, social, cultural, and economic factors of the occupants. So how can we make our housing and our neighborhoods more environmentally pleasing? More parks. How do we begin to have our housing to be more efficient in terms of energy? And so that was one of the things that came out as well. increase access to housing opportunities for all citizens with the removal of economic and regulatory barriers. How can City Hall begin to remove some of those barriers? So when residents want to add something to their houses, or if someone wants to come, a small builder wants to come and do a whole block of land trust properties, how do we remove those barriers so that they're able to create affordable housing? Ensure all occupants of residents have quality, efficient, and healthy homes. So the residents of Kansas City did pass just recently the Healthy Homes Ordinance that will allow the city of Kansas City to begin looking at health and safety areas in rental housing and make sure that folks are able to live in that housing. Address the housing needs of the most vulnerable population, and I talked a little bit about that, having affordable housing linkages that create housing first. So have those social services in place. And Kansas City does a really, really good job in terms of their social service agencies across the city. And how do you create those linkages with affordable housing? And the last but not least was ensure adherence to fair housing laws. 2018 is the 50th anniversary of the Fair Housing Law, and we've done a lot of work as it relates to discrimination over the years, but we have a lot to do. And we just need to begin to make sure there's not discrimination as it relates to race, religion, sex, national origin, disability, and family statuses as it relates to the sale, financing, and rental of housing. And so those are goals that we would like to continue to have a hand in and try to make sure that we are doing the right thing as it relates to affordable housing. And many cities have added to this list. There are seven fair housing discrimination sections. However, a lot of cities have begun to think about other types of forms of discrimination that they have in their city, and they're adding that to their list. One of the ones that the city of Kansas City has been thinking about as it relates to domestic violence. And so when a woman and her child, or a man and his child, or a family are experiencing domestic violence, and they have to be kicked out of their house for one reason or another, that's a protective class for which that particular rental history is not following them. So that's one of the ones that the city of Kansas City is thinking about. But there's a number of different ones: source of income, just a number of different items that cities around the country are doing. So I wanted to at least talk about a little bit about the plan and where it is and what's next. So as I said, that the housing policy draft is actually on our website right now. The Department of Housing and the Department of Planning gave a presentation to the City Council a couple weeks ago about how this has all evolved, how we did resident surveys to have the residents tell us what they would like to see. And if you go to that housing policy, it talks about all the resident surveys. It also gives you a really good collection of public hearings and what the residents said during that public hearing. So it's interesting reading. So I would encourage you to go to that. I do believe that the City Council will continue to have conversation about about this over the next 2 months, and we'll try to finalize the housing policy. So there's a number of initiatives already being talked about, and so I would encourage you to be a part of that. Thank you, Mike.
Good morning.
Good morning.
In my small neighborhood, there are a number of homes that are owned, I assume for speculative reasons, and they are vacant. And I'm assuming that the owner is waiting for the property values to increase, and then they'll sell them. Is there a law that says that you can't keep a property vacant? I mean, this is legal, I'm assuming, that they can sit on a property for decades. And, you know, so my question is there a law about how long someone can own a property and just leave it vacant and then it deteriorates and fires, et cetera?
So this was a question with a number of residents. And as I told you, there's a lot of investors coming into the city. We have lots of homes that are vacant, and so I would encourage you to call code enforcement and 311 constantly if that home is being deteriorated or vandalized. If they keep the home in a decent condition, it's probably not much the city can do, but if those homes are deteriorating and you're seeing people coming living in them and that kind of thing, they can begin to do code enforcement on them and have those owners either come fix it up or begin to sell it to the neighborhoods. So we're trying to figure out how we can have neighborhood associations. So there's a lot of CDCs up here, and that was one of our recommendations to the council. Try to begin to support the community development organizations out there so that as these properties do deteriorate to a point where the vacant landlords, we can get them from the vacant landlords, we can give them to the CDCs to help fix them up and turn them back into home ownership. So that is one of our big issues in terms of these abandoned and dilapidated houses, how to get them back into production.
Do you see any opportunities, and maybe you will in the future, for co-housing communities? I'm particularly interested in affordable, community-focused housing, whether it's co-housing or a broad explanation of that, for older adults, or certainly mixed communities.
So I do see that as a housing option for us. We really have not done that in the past in Kansas City. There's a few examples of it around, but as we were talking to the residents of Kansas City, especially the younger and older group, they don't want to have that maintenance piece. I mean, they would like to have they would like to have a home, but they or actually single-family home, but they don't want to deal with the maintenance. And so how do we begin to do different alternative housing for folks that want a different kind of home ownership or a different type of housing? I was just talking to a group of young folks, and they were like, we don't need all this big house with a yard. We would be happy to have a 1,000 to 1,200 square foot house. It's just me and my wife, and we want to be around a great community. So how do we satisfy those alternatives? I mean, we're all used to the house with the yard, but we need to begin to think about other alternatives that folks could live and be productive as well.
Hi, I'm Taylor Blackman.
Good morning.
I am a graduate social work student at UMKC. We're currently looking at tenants' rights issues right now, and so I noticed that you had spoke about the policy goals, and you had talked about quality and healthy homes. So when I went to go vote for that, which I'm sure everybody in this room voted yes. Mm-hmm. I noticed that there wasn't a definition for what a healthy home was. It just said healthy homes, which is great, but I was wondering, what are we considering a healthy home to be?
So I wasn't involved in the actual writing of the, but I do know quite a bit about it. Free of lead, free of dangerous like electrical wiring, free of, you know, sewer coming into your house. So those kind of issues is what this ordinance is trying to alleviate, where you have safe and safe and soundness problems.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Crystal. Kind of to go along with the tenants' rights, I noticed that you were speaking about having people who have suffered domestic violence as a protected class from those evictions not counting against them. But I find that that's kind of way after the fact. So what is Kansas City wanting to do about landlords not being able to evict people who have called the police lawfully? Because what happens is, as somebody who has survived domestic violence, we just won't call, because once we're in an eviction, whether it's going to follow me or not, now I have to find a place to live tomorrow, and I'm in danger, or whatever the case may be. So what are we doing to stop people from being able to evict domestic violence anyways?
So I think that is a part of the domestic violence ordinance that they're thinking about putting together, is trying to figure out how to prevent landlords from actually evicting. Some domestic violent folks want to leave because they don't want to be where someone can find them. But for the ones that want to stay in their apartment and they should be encouraged to do so, and they should not be evicted. And so that, from my understanding, is a part of that ordinance.
Hi, I'm Chris Gentry. Just a very quick comment on the question made earlier. For those kind of houses that are not necessarily derelict, but like are been lying vacant for years, there are ordinances that have been passed through both like Vancouver, where I'm actually from, as well as the Northeast, that have done like made attempts to make it so that if you're not like living in the house within like 5 years, 4 years, it like go through a process of making it so it reverts to public ownership. Anyway, but my actual question is, so I am a graduate student in public policy, particularly focusing on tenants' rights. And so we have a lot of really good ordinances and really good, like, actual things on the books for how to enforce tenants' rights. But I find that for the majority of the actual tenants, they either A, don't know their rights, or B, have no way of enforcing them. I did a lot of work with the tenants' union, and we would regularly find tenants who were routinely getting violated in a very, very obvious violations, but they have no access to legal support, and so they would often go and be like, this is wrong, and the landlord would be like, eh. But once we actually sent like a legal letter, the landlord would back down. But for the vast majority of tenants, they don't have access to those options, so how can we actually make sure that while we have good laws in the books, those laws are actually being followed through with?
So one of our thoughts about that it has to do with our some of our fair housing goals. The fair housing piece would allow us to go out to a number of developments and really inform tenants, because I think a lot of tenants just don't know what their rights are. And so how do we begin to inform tenants of what their rights are? And then how do we create some type of system where we can send tenants to those legal folks that could help provide that information.
A couple of things. One, right now I am in HUD housing, and the conditions are good. They make sure, I think they are managed by churches, and it seems like the churches do a better job of managing. I mean, it is HUD housing, but they do a better job of managing because they have a real concern for their residents. When I was homeless, I couldn't get a diagnosis for my disability because I pretty much didn't exist. Because if you're homeless, you kind of don't exist. So I want to know whether they are going to expand the definition of what is homeless, because I think a lot of people just fall off. They're invisible. They just fall off. It has to be broader than somebody who lives under an underpass. You know, people who are constantly sofa surfing, or you know, or mission to mission. So, if we're going to get the federal and the city and the state money, what is the definition of homelessness so that some people don't become invisible because of that definition?
So HUD actually has a definition of homeless. They have expanded it somewhat just recently. However, our federal money is based on their definition of homelessness.
My name is Anita, by the way.
Hey, Anita.
As I understand it, a couple of reasons for evictions would be either a health care issue or failure to pay utility bills. And I know that the water bills have been increasing, water sewer bills have been increasing substantially, and some people just can't afford it, or they'll have one health event that knocks them over the... Is there something that a tenant can do to get help for either one of those events, healthcare related or utility bill related?
So there are a couple of, so HUD does give Kansas City a number of grants to help with utility assistance. And so, but it's never enough. And the state also gives Kansas City funds. So there's about three or four agencies that actually work pretty diligently to give utility assistance to homeowners or to renters that are that need assistance. However, that funding is never enough. It's never enough.
I presume that these investors you were referring to were taking advantage of all the foreclosures in the last
yes.
10 years.
And I'm a lot just, of are out-of-town investors.
Well, my question is, are these local mom-and-pop investors, or is this a systematic effort on a larger scale out of Wall Street that goes even beyond Kansas City but nationwide effort to snap up these homes and make a buck?
We love mom-and-pop developers that are out there. I've dealt with quite a few of them over the year I've been at the city, and they are great. They really want to make the neighborhood look better, and they're trying to sell their homes to folks that want to live in the neighborhood. And so we want to encourage, and that was one of the things that came out of a lot of our discussions, that we want to figure out how to encourage more mom-and-pop builders and folks that are rehabbing, and how do we do that? Because they are the ones that really are concerned about our community. You just have a lot of folks coming into a lot of the cities. It's not just Kansas City that see these homes as investment potential at some point, and so they just hold them for a long time.
I was in line before. I'm not sure I had a well-formed question. But so I work for Truman Behavioral Health, and I'm one of the therapists, not in one of the housing programs. And Truman is big enough that I don't even really understand very well how our housing program works. I know we've got a couple of programs that are able to place homeless people in housing pretty quickly. But I continually see the need for more affordable housing, or housing for, you know, really vulnerable right. populations. And it seems like my perception is that people will be on a waiting list for Section 8 housing for a long time, or they just will feel overwhelmed and discouraged about, like, how do they get hooked up with different vouchers. And then I also see that some of those vouchers and funding sources are temporary. So, like, right now we've got a lot of clients who've had a particular funding source for a couple of years, and they're on disability income, but now they're being forced to move, and they really aren't any better financially than they were 2 years ago when they got that funding source. But I guess my question is, what you said, that I thought I heard you say the social service agencies in the area are doing a great job. My perception is just that there's a huge need that is not being met, and I'm wondering what the city's role is in a specific way, or if you could speak to specific things the city can and is doing to help the most vulnerable homeless people in our city.
So, quite a few of the programs that HUD has done over the years have been cut as it relates to persons with disabilities and persons with mental illness. And so what is happening is that a lot of those social services are trying to, including Truman, are trying to fill the gaps. There's a tremendous need out there, you're correct. And they can't do everything, but they're doing a great job at what they are doing. One of the pieces that we included in the draft policy was, how do we begin to work with Truman and some of the other social service agencies to try to construct that housing, and then they can help with the ongoing services. And in Truman's case, they're trying to help with the actual rental piece. And so how do we find those sources of income to continue where folks do not have to come out of their house? How do we find those sources of incomes that are permanent? So that is something that's in our housing policy. Like I said, there's never enough to go around. We try to, over the last couple of years, we have tried to, as developers come with their tax credit projects, we have tried to make priorities of those that are serving persons with AIDS or big, large families, or they'll put 10 units that are persons with mental illness or persons with disabilities. So we're trying to put those type of projects at the top of our list in order for there to be more units out there.
Morning, my name is Peter. Nationally as well as locally, there's sort of a trend where artists will move into a neighborhood, and then subsequently you'll see developers will move in, and then they'll buy up en masse properties, dilapidated buildings, and then, you know, the housing costs go up exponentially, displacing people from those neighborhoods. And then, you know, it also affects neighborhoods that are in close proximity to those neighborhoods that have been affected, like the downtown area or midtown area of Kansas City, Missouri. What means are there at the city's disposal to limit that sort of displacement of people? Because if you're a working person, incomes haven't gone up, but rent keeps going up, and most of the housing stock that we keep building, it just seems that they're luxury high-end units meant for people that are coming into Kansas City, none of it for the people that have already lived over here most of their lives.
So I will say, oddly enough, and people don't realize this, when the downtown area, and I'm assuming you're talking about a lot of the downtown area and around that area. The downtown area actually has quite a bit of affordable housing. And by affordable housing, I'm saying probably 50% of median income or less. So they have quite a bit of affordable housing. The issue there is how to preserve what we have. Because we don't see, the market has taken over, and basically they're building higher income housing. But we would like to try to figure out how we're going to preserve what we have downtown, and then try to figure out if some of these market rate developers that are downtown, will they begin to do mixed income? So how do we begin to incentivize the market rate folks to do some mixed income in the areas that are beginning to have this pressure in terms of rent? But the really essential thing is, how do we preserve what we have downtown? There's quite a bit there now, and trying to figure out how to do that.
Good morning. I was speaking with a friend of mine who is a auditor for the city, and the two of us were discussing what really is the definition of affordable housing. And we were specifically talking about the new plans for the uptown area at 39th and Broadway. And in that proposed plan, 15 to 20% of those new units would be for affordable housing, but their definition of affordable housing was for folks earning up to 120% of Kansas City's average median income, which is about $47,000 a year. So that would then look, if we're looking at people spending up to 30% of their income, you would be looking at those units that are affordable going for about $1,200 a month. And I'm just wondering, where are the plans for the housing in Kansas City for people, as you had just mentioned, that are making 50% of AMI or less?
So I know that conversation is still evolving as it relates to what's affordable and what's not. I'm sorry. So I know that conversation is still evolving. As it relates to the housing department today, the funding we use is contingent on HUD definitions. And so, however, this is market rate housing. So that's why that conversation about what's affordable and what's not is still evolving. So I would say stay tuned, add your voices to the conversation.
You made mention of how a number of investors, like out-of-state and out-of-town investors, are coming here and sort of snapping up some of the property around here to sort of keep the local folks from having the best opportunity to get at it. And along with that, you also made mention that associations, that sometimes you guys with HUD reach out to associations to try to, whatever insight or whatever type of encouragement you can give them to try to, acquire these properties and whatnot. And I would take it a step further and like to ask, what are you doing in terms of really trying to reach out and put whatever energy that you can have in regards to the associations and have them to go ahead and network where they can, as a group, you know, purchase these properties, and if there's some funding that's maybe tied to your agency as well to do that. And so I think that would be the key, to have the local-based association to go ahead and network and purchase the property before the out-of-state, out-of-town buyers come in and do that. I think that'd be the best way to handle that problem.
Right. And all those pieces are on the table. But we do need additional funding sources in order to make all of that work. So we're looking for some additional funding sources to be able to do that.
I'm Carolyn McDonald, and I have attempted to make a living with rental property for many, many years. And it was very, very different at first. A lot of my motivation was to be involved with neighborhoods, to have housing available for lower income people, et cetera. But one of the things that has been very unfortunate is one of the biggest obstacles, and actually I would say one of the biggest enemies, has been the city of Kansas City, Missouri. And there are many, many instances I can cite where city and city policies made it almost impossible. So I no longer can really make a living with rental property. I've been getting rid of it. I'll just give one example. I was continually cited for a property that the city owned, not my property, the city. And finally, I ended up in court. And the city inspector came and talked about all these violations, et cetera. And finally, the judge checked and found out that that was a Kansas City, Missouri-owned property. And yet I wasted hours and lots of dollars defending myself against violations at a city property. There are a number of things where, for example, the city will not, the trash pickup will not pick up a bag set out on trash pickup day if that house is vacant. And so if you go and clean up after a renter who's moved, put out a trash bag, I ended up in court with a violation and a fine because I put out a trash bag from trash that I owned, was paying taxes on, but the property at that time was vacant. So the city needs to listen of ways to help the mom-and-pop people. Almost all the mom-and-pop real estate people I know went bankrupt and don't have property anymore. What can the city do to truly be a friend and not an enemy?
So some of your comments are some of the same comments we received as a part of our housing policy. And you may have been at some of the hearings as well. So that is the reason why we need to eliminate barriers to especially our CDCs and our small mom-pop builders. We need to figure out how to not. So there are several ordinances that we're working on that may fix some of those issues.
I don't know how the layering or the funding would work on this, but it feels as though the gentrification issue comes into play with the low income, disadvantaged, et cetera, areas in our city. One of the things that goes on is when there are violations. I mean, frankly, I believe, I could be wrong, that the way our codes for housing violations are set up, we could go to the most costly mansion in the city and find, if we worked at it, a violation. So there's a lot of layers of violations possible. So anyway, predatory people who want to be in the business of gentrifying properties look for and find readily code issues. That's known. Would it make sense for Kansas City to have another layer, yet another layer of our city's government? Again, I don't know where funding, I don't know all that stuff, but would it make sense to have, when someone calls 311, and I know that the housing department is mandated to respond to those calls, to have a layer where a group of people can go to said house that is being targeted, whether in a gentrification line or some other line, to go there and work with that home owner or renter or whatever it is to create an abatement, or that's a fancy word, to get rid of the violations in a friendly, non-punitive, non-financially layered way.
So I do get what you're saying, and that is part of things that our minor home repair program does, but here again, it's never enough money. So we really have to begin to advocate to figure out how to put more money in these areas for minor home repair to help seniors and folks that are low income help, fix up their properties. And so never enough money. We run out of money every year. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate all your questions.
Jennifer, thank you very much. That was excellent, and obviously there's a lot of interest in this topic. In gratitude for your coming today, we have our All Souls UU Forum Speaker's Mug, our gift to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I drink a lot of coffee. Thank you, thank you guys.
Thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed tonight's presentation, The Rent's Too High, Kansas City's Housing Policy Options. This program was recorded on Sunday, September 23rd, at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church. All Souls Forum is edited and produced for broadcast by Christina Frazier. Our theme song was composed, performed, and recorded by musician Fred Potter. This program will be available for podcast within one day of broadcast on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. Remember, you can also find archived All Souls podcasts and many other interesting and enlightening public affairs programs produced by KKFI on the KKFI website. Thanks for joining us this evening, and we hope you tune in next week, same time, same place, when we will continue the conversation here at 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio station.